broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM. This is your Election 50.
Good morning, it's 7am. I'm Tim Smith and this is the latest news. The most recent result to come through is Poole, which is staying Conservative, won by Robert Sims with 23,745 votes. The Tories are celebrating their success across Dorset this morning so far. Christopher Chope holds the Conservative seat for Christchurch with 28,887 votes. Tobias Elwood holds for Bournemouth East with 22,060 votes. Conor Burns follows with 20,155 votes to Conservatives for Bournemouth West. The West Dorset seat is held by Conservative Oliver Letwin. And finally, Richard Drax holds South Dorset seat. With news waiting to come in on Poole, North Dorset and Mid Dorset and North Poole. Former Liberal Democrat Chief Secretary to the Treasury, Danny Alexander, has lost the Inverness, Nairn, Bednoch and Strathspey seat to the SNP's Drew Hendry. He says he's proud of what he's achieved, but conceded that it's been a very tough election.
It's very disappointing. I'm personally disappointed, and for the party more widely, it's been a very, very hard night indeed. So, I believe that we've done a good job for the country over the last 5 years, but clearly that's not an opinion shared by voters in some parts of the country.
Norman Baker, Lib Dem, has lost his Lewes seat to the Conservatives. Maria Caulfield beat him by 1,083 votes. Your election Westminster reporter Ben Fisher says the feeling amongst Conservative candidates in Westminster is confident. This comes after the BBC reports the possibility of a Conservative majority.
The consensus here is that David Cameron has done his job and he's done it very well. The only question obviously remains to be seen whether it's part of a coalition or whether he will win.
Employment Minister Esther McVeigh has described the difficulty of defending as a Tory candidate. This comes after losing her Wirral West seat to Labour's Margaret Greenwood, who won the seat with a margin of 417 votes.
Well, that's how politics works. I always knew I was taking on a tight marginal seat. I wanted to come home and represent my area. I was the only Conservative MP on Merseyside, and it just shows we've got a lot more to do.
Ousted Liberal Democrat John Hemming has called on party leader Nick Clegg to stand down. He claims that the party's national policy had cost him votes after 10 years as MP of Birmingham Yardley. Mr Hemming, who had plans to rise from the grave at the next election, added that Mr Clegg should have resigned last year. Five men have been arrested following the explosion of a police car at a count in Leicestershire. The incident took place at 2:30 this morning. Firefighters have explained the attack was a malicious act. The men have yet to be identified. Counting of votes hasn't started yet in South Thanet, where Farage's hopes to win are diminishing. The council is blaming it on the volume of votes and problems checking postal votes. The results are not expected until 11 a.m. You're up to date with the news from your election radio coverage.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. It is now 3 minutes past seven. This is Your Election 15, streaming on the web at yourelection15.co.uk. You can get in touch with us via Twitter using the hashtag YE15 and starting your message with the word radio.
We are in fact joined by more fantastic panellists. You've heard from all of these fellas before this evening, and this morning, I should say. Dan's back, Roger and Paddy, thanks for joining us, fellas. We want to talk a little bit now about something that was kind of our initiative from the offset. When we started Your Election 15, our team came up with some results, and they went out and did a bit of research and found out that I think it was 48% of young voters were undecided, which sort of sparked the debate, is politics engaging with young voters and young people in the right way? Whose responsibility is it? Should it be educated in school, whereas religious education is still something that's set in the curriculum? Politics isn't. We're aware that religion is a choice, and politics and where your political ideology lies is also a choice. So why is this not in the curriculum? Should it be the politicians themselves who come directly to you and interaction with your local MP? Is that an opportunity that should be increased? And just in general, is utilising new techniques like social media or online voting a better way to engage with young voters? So if you can cast your minds back a couple of years to when you're all students yourselves, perhaps you can sort of shed some light on how some of the policies could engage more with young voters?
Well, perhaps if I could kick off, my daughter, in fact, voted for the very first time this year. She voted yesterday with me. I don't know what she voted, I hasten to add. But she was talking about her age group. She's 18. And a lot of people, she said, she's at Southampton University, boo hiss, are deeply unengaged. They feel that the terms, I think, in which the election was couched, the close-up really on process rather than policy, I think turned off a lot of young voters. I think a lot of people don't want to talk about things that seem very much inside the Westminster bubble, that seem to be uninteresting, I think, to young people who often feel that there are very important issues, terrible word, to talk about, but things like poverty, things like education, things like how you pay for your education, of course.
This year has been one of the best, though, for the younger generation getting involved in the election, though, with lots of parties such as the Conservatives getting involved with, like, Facebook, for example. But, yeah, a lot of people do say that it's the lack of, like, politics in your education, which is why there is such a disconnection. But
Where it has been different is north of the border, you know? We saw that really powerfully with the IndyRef, that social media was really making headways, and, you know, and new demographics were being energized into the political process, as it turns out, kind of irrevocably. It kind of does your head in. They've lost the IndyRef 55-45. You'd think that would kill it dead forever, but, you know, like some sort of tartan wearing zombie, it's come out, and you know, and that's linked with that. You've now got the Scots Nats. Having mobilised sort of new voters, younger voters, very much better than any other political party, including CCHQ, with you know, the letter that went out to every candidate at the day of the dissolution saying to take lots of selfies, you know, and make sure that no one in the picture with them is wearing a tie. So, you know, whenever Dave went out to kind of go on the hustings, if you know, before your selfie, you had to take your tie off, you're wearing one. It was quite silly.
You're wearing a tie today, though, Paddy.
I am. But when I go in to see the Prime Minister, it'll come off. But, you know, all that sort of seemed a little bit at the end more for show. But in Scotland, it had quite a lot of effect, and it had the effect of making the Scots Nats quite attractive to younger voters by positioning themselves to the left of Scottish Labour. And that was not something that Scottish Labour knew how to respond to. They've never faced an opponent from the left.
It is. I'm afraid we're going to have to interrupt you very briefly here, panel, as we're going to go live to our reporter, Jason, who is at Poole Lighthouse. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Dom.
How are you doing, buddy? You okay?
I'm very good. It's been a long night / morning, but we're starting to get some results here down in Poole, if you'd like to hear them.
Oh, we would love to. Been eagerly waiting.
Okay, I think it's been broken in the news bulletin, but we have the result from the Poole constituency, and it went as the prediction would, with a strong Conservative majority there for Robert Sims. He had 23,785 votes ahead of UKIP in second place with 7,956 votes. Labour in third place, 6,102 votes. And quite the shock really in this year is that the Lib Dems have dropped down to 5,572 votes in fourth place. So it's a stronghold. It was a looked like a stronghold for the Conservatives all the way through this election, and that's how it's turned out here. And so they're done and dusted, and now just across the hall we're just waiting for the final few confirmation and paperwork to be done for Mid Dorset and North Poole, and hopefully we'll have that result to you before we go off air this morning.
Thanks ever so much, Jason. Absolute sterling work from you this morning. Keep going.
Cheers, thank you, Dom.
It's great that you're there live on the scene to offer us the results of that real key marginal seat, Mid Dorset. We're going to be getting more from that later. Thanks ever so much. So we've been touching a little bit on young voters and how you can sort of interact. We haven't yet heard from Dan since you've returned to the studio. How are you? You okay? You look
great.
A bit jaded.
Oh, yes. Fantastic 2 hours sleep.
You lucky man.
Yeah.
Do you know how much sleep I've had, Dan?
I shouldn't have mentioned that word. Yeah, okay. Well, I guess to pick up what Roger was saying, well, both of you actually, is it seems to me that the way that we talk about politics is a problem in terms of engaging young people, both in terms of how politicians talk to, or rather at, young people, as well as how the media covers politics, not just the process over the issues, etc. But I guess I would also argue, you know, it's incumbent upon citizens of all ages to learn about politics and engage themselves, okay? Which then gets us to the point of, okay, one of the barriers for a lot of young people is the education issue, is the barriers to entry for political discourse at the, you know, the elite level in most newspapers, etc., will often put them off. So I would hope and expect that addressing it more formally in education would lower some of those barriers, because, you know, talking to a lot of young people, actually, you know, I will always keep reminding people that the problem of political disengagement, problem of political apathy, etc., is not just young people, and the reasons that young people turn off from politics are largely the same reasons as every other age turns off politics. However, to address your education question, I would strongly advocate that there's a stronger political citizenship element in the curriculum.
You see, the thing is, as a 7-year-old, let's put our feet, if we can.
That's very kind of you. I'm actually 36.
You don't look 7.
No, well, you know, I'm old before my time. If you could cast your age back to being sort of age 7, you're not going to be aware of the media's coverage of politics. It's not going to be something that's going to stigmatize your opinion. You're not going to be swayed by it in any way, shape or form. What you are, however, at that age is going to be very keen to learn. And shouldn't that not be a great age to introduce politics as a subject? Perhaps just explaining what government is, how things like, you know, you learn the difference between right and wrong and what laws are from an early age. So shouldn't it be right to find out how and why they're formed? And would we not see, you know, one of the complaints about Ed Miliband, leader of the Labour Party, was that he'd never had a job. And you look at people before him, Gordon Brown, you could say that all his political career, it was only a political career. He was geared towards becoming a prime minister, and that was kind of his main emphasis in life. He didn't have that sort of experience. And is it not the fact that if we were to introduce politics to a 7-year-old, that perhaps they could turn around and go, do you know what, one day I want to be a politician. Mm. I come from a family that live in a council house. I've had a state education. I haven't gone to Eton. I haven't had a private school education. But I want to be an MP. I want to represent a real minority voice. And I think that's kind of what turns a lot of young voters off, is the fact that there is no real minority voice when you look at it. When you think about it and you think about how diverse the UK is, would introducing politics to education this early on actually see a change in the demographic of MPs that we see?
It would be nice to think it would, but I think the problem you've got is the dangers inherent in teaching politics, because you talked about teaching religion, and that's controversial enough, as we know. Whenever you talk about politics, you bring in the values that you import to it. And it's very hard to teach neutral politics. So the risk would be you get the politics of the person who's teaching you.
Yeah.
And I can see a lot of people objecting to that. God knows there are a lot of conservatives who think the schools, and indeed universities, are full of woolly lefties already. So you're going to run up against that, I think. And it's interesting you talk about 7-year-olds, because I think you maybe have hit on something there. Because before the age of 12 or 13, I think a lot of young people, children if you like, have very strong ideas about right and wrong and justice, injustice, and perhaps don't necessarily work out how those ideas can be translated into reality if you happen to be Prime Minister. But at least have those kind of very firm ideas and principles, and maybe that can be built on, so that you have people going into this who think, well, look, there are things. It is important to vote. People died so I could vote. It is important to speak truth to power. It is important to make sure that people have equal opportunities in society. Those kind of basic things, which in a way are almost politically neutral, could be taught, I think, at that age. That would be my feeling.
I think one thing we shouldn't forget entirely either is the importance of when on television you had, yes, minister, yes, prime minister, or, you know, or the quite splendid original British version of House of Cards, these sort of imaginative works do quite a lot, I think, to draw your thoughts in into Parliament, and, you know, and I don't think they should be terribly underestimated. When you have good inventive, creative television revolving around Parliament, you know, or other bits of politics, because, you know, there is quite a lot more to politics than Westminster. But, you know, but it does lend itself to the imagination. That is a tremendously powerful way of absorbing information about how it works, familiarizing yourself through imagination with, you know, what it would be like to be a PPS or a backbencher or at different points in the process. Some of the motives and calculations that go along. I don't think we should completely forget about the importance of having good televisual drama about politics.
Okay, well, thank you very much again. We're going to have to move on to our social media reporter at the moment. So thank you, panel.
Hello, guys. So, obviously, there's been a lot of stuff going on social media at the moment. I'd just like to actually tell you that we kind of got blocked on Twitter earlier. Your Election 15 got blocked because of we were actually tweeting so much that they thought we might be spamming it, which is shows that we were doing our job, I guess.
Oh.
I just thought I'd fill you in on some of the things that the election leaders have been saying, or some of just the MPs in general. So Alex Salmond has said that the Scottish Lion has roared across the country this morning, which obviously that has happened, as SNP is almost, they think it's going to be total win in Scotland, with Labour being completely kicked out. Miliband has said this has clearly been a very disappointing and difficult night for the Labour Party. To every member and supporter, I want to say thank you. And that got 1,200 favourites and 1,200 retweets as well, showing that Labour are feeling pretty sad about that. So I wonder how his Millie fans are feeling now. I'm sure they won't be happy. There's also a Facebook page called Ed Miliband is Cool, so I wonder how that'll be going down. The Liberal Democrat Twitter account has said it's shaping up to be a bitter night for Lib Dems. Results do not do justice to the hard work, dedication and passion of our campaigners. So, it hasn't been great at all for Lib Dems, as Twitter is showing. And, they're kind of realising that now.
Any Nick Clegg memes yet?
No, not yet. I'm sure they'll be on their way. There's been a lot of things, you know, the Paddy Ashdown said he'll eat his hat if the poll was correct, and there's been loads of pictures of him with his hats.
He's going to have to eat his hat, surely.
Yeah. I wonder which hat, though, because there's a lot going around. Obviously, it's looking pretty blue in Dorset locally. So David Cameron's actually tweeted, "One nation, one united kingdom. That is how I hope to govern if I am fortunate enough to continue as prime minister," which at the moment it's looking like he could do. And I've just been thinking, obviously, John Major in 1992, the Sun newspaper came out with, "It's the Sun what won it for John Major." And I'm thinking this year, this is the social media election. Is it the social media that could have won it for David Cameron? But I guess we'll just have to wait and see a bit longer for that one.
Yeah, good point, though. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Charlie. Back to our political editor now. Here he is, the man himself, Mr. Alex Folkards.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's interesting the claim that was just made, actually, that David Cameron could have won it through social media, because he was one of the first people to object to Twitter being used by political people, and then recently, of course, he was brought back on board Twitter. We do have some interesting issues facing us in this final run in the election. Ed Balls is having a recount in his constituency. Rumours on the wire go it was the Labour Party that instigated and requested the recount. If this is true, then it could mean that Ed Balls is on the verge of losing his seat, which would be so detrimental to the Labour Party that we wouldn't even know where to sit anymore. Or what to think. Speaking of which, it's very early in the morning. Dom, how are you keeping together?
Well, I've just been given a cup of coffee, which tastes like gravel.
It is not nice.
It's more the effect of the coffee that I'm really feeding off of right now. So thank you guys outside in the world for preparing me a cup of coffee. I think it's coffee. It's been a long, long day.
But it's helping, you know, it's helping you bring the national picture. And I mean, at the moment, you know, SNP, huge triumph. They've beaten all the polls, 55 seats, I think they're claiming for SNP at the moment. That's monumental. That's going to change the geopolitical makeup of the UK, you know. You really should be getting more excited about this, even though it's 7:30 in the morning.
Believe me, on the surface, I may look a little bit drained and a little bit weary, but underneath, I'm bubbly with joy. I can't quite contain myself.
Bubbly to face another Tory government.
I can't wait. Another 5 years, bring it on. Thanks very much to our political editor there,
Thank
Alex.
Thank you very much, Alex.
So I'm joined again by Dan. Dan Jackson is back, and Chris is joining them this time as well. Hello, fellas. I'm hoping you've got some topics of conversation for me, Dan. I've been informed that you have.
Have I? Well, we were just talking about the what went so wrong. Why did Labour collapse, and how have the Tories managed to upset the pre-election polls?
Everyone expects it to be closer than it is.
Certainly. I mean, so there's obviously going to be an inquest. I mean, I remember coming here at whatever it was 7 hours ago thinking, right, there's going to be either an inquest into the opinion polls or the exit polls, and it turns out second time in a row the exit polls were spot on. So now there's a number of opinion pollsters, in fact the lot of them, who will be having their own inquests. But anyway, yeah, I mean, thinking about what has led to this final swing towards Tories, is it the media? Is it the press's push? I mean, it certainly was less than subtle, and the character assassinations of Miliband were unrelenting. And you know, what Linton Crosby hoped would happen is that when I'm just looking at Chris's face there, it's not a radio moment. But what Linton Crosby was hoping would happen is that people would walk into the booth and then have Ed Miliband or Cameron in their mind and make a choice between the two of them that Cameron would win. And of course, we can't see into the crystal ball of every single voter, but certainly something has happened in the last day or two, you would think, that has really swung the election dramatically.
I think it's had to do with Ed Miliband's been sort of, he was pulling it back for a while, he was looking all right, but I think people sort of bottled it at the time. I think they, because David Cameron is the safe option, everyone's scared of losing their money and things. He's the safe economical option. And I think that Labour just didn't manage to do enough for sorting out people's image in their mind, like Dan was saying, of Ed Miliband. He just wasn't enough for people to go in there and put their vote down, I think. Because leading up to it, everyone was thinking that Labour was so strong and people had turned around quite a lot in the opinion polls, like you were saying. And I just think they didn't do enough to really convince people to vote on the day, because once you're there, it's a little bit different to just writing it down on an opinion poll.
It was all a little bit too little too late, really. I think it speaks volumes when they wouldn't even put Miliband's face on their own pamphlets. Like, was it a case of if we'd seen another Labour leader, perhaps even his brother David, but, you know, could it have been a different story?
I think the Labour Party, looking back at the you know, the five-year parliament and since Ed got elected, etc., I think the Labour Party were too slow to get on the front foot in a number of ways, policy-wise, in terms of, you know, nailing the lie that it was a Labour economic catastrophe that the Conservatives were trying to get us out of. That was allowed to continue, and it has been a bedrock of their communications from the start of this parliament and certainly in the election as well. And also, in terms of taking on the press at an earlier time, you know, he did it when his father was attacked or whatever, but he should have been on the front foot from the start.
I'm going to have to instruct you very briefly. We're going to go live to Jason, who has some results on the Mid Dorset and North Poole constituency. Hello, Jason.
Oh, hi, Dom. This is Fresh Off the Press. We've got Mike Tomlinson on stage now, and that means it's been a win here for the Conservatives in the key marginal seat, a win of over 10,000 votes for Michael Tomlinson over Vicky Slade, who had 13,109 votes. So that's a breaking story out of here, Mid Dorset. It's come late on in the early morning here, but a good win for the Conservatives on what has been a very good night in this general election.
What does the general atmosphere feel like to this result, Jason? Are people surprised?
I'm not really surprised. It came quite clear from an early stage that this was going to be the outcome here in mid-Dorset, and the buzz has been building, and there's a lot of cheering going on with Michael Tomlinson speaking now on stage in front of me, talking very positively about how a great campaign they've ran and working together with the people of Poole and North Dorset, and mid-Dorset and North Poole, to get this region back on the map for all the right reasons.
That's absolutely fantastic. Thanks very much, Jason. We're joined in the studio by two of our political experts, Dan and Chris. What do you both make of that?
Well, I mean, I guess this is the further decimation of the Lib Dems in a traditionally strong southwest. But I guess if you now look at the UK, the map of the UK, it's a kind of a it's increasingly polarized. It's like three stripes, isn't it? Of yellow at the top, a consolidation of Labour in the north, as in Labour were not only holding their seats in the north, but they were extending the advantage. And in the south is increasingly blue, except for some metropolitan areas, etc. And that, I mean, that's David Cameron will be in a good place at the moment, but that is one of the challenges for his next premiership, is to try and unite an increasingly fractious country. You know, SNP is completely yellow almost. And Labour, the North is increasingly politically disconnected from the South. That makes some challenges, although right now I'm sure he'll be pretty chipper.
I can imagine he will be. That is going to be quite interesting. We've been talking many things, such as the fact that we might be heading towards a referendum on the EU as well. Is that something that you two feel would be a positive or negative move?
I think it needs to happen. Obviously, UKIP haven't done amazingly in this election, but they have raised the question of the European Union, and it is something that's come to the forefront of our minds, and people want the referendum. And also having it will get out of the way. It needs to be done so that we can move on and maybe start actually working on our relationship with the EU, whether or not we stay in it or not, and work figuring out how that will work, rather than just sort of sitting around electing a whole UKIP series of MEPs just to stand up to the European Union. We need to sort our relationship out with it once and for all.
Speaking about the EU, what's your opinion on going into it coming out of it, if that happens?
I don't think it's as big of an issue as everyone thinks, but the way Germany's been talking about a European army, I think if that were to even come close to happening, I'd just say out, because that's a step too far. It's not a United States of Europe. It's originally an economic bloc, and it's spreading too far from that, in my opinion.
Well, I can see your referendum 2016 coming up. I hope you're ready, guys. This is our next opportunity for round-the-clock coverage.
I think we might have just recovered from the sleep deprivation from tonight, ready for that potential referendum. Do you think it could be beneficial, detrimental?
Well, I think if we look at if the Scottish recent referendum is anything to go by, it's another opportunity to put politics in the spotlight, and I really hope that it would engage the public with an issue that is massively misunderstood. The levels of knowledge on Europe are painfully low, based on pretty poor media coverage of Europe. It's a difficult difficult topic for journalists to cover. So I hope that it would be an opportunity for people to actually find out about Europe, and including young people, an opportunity again to put politics in the spotlight and to engage people with it, and to have, and I hope from the we pretty much know what the anti-European angle and argument is. It's crystallised around immigration now with UKIP, etc. But I also hope that the pro-European side gets out there and makes the case, because it has not been done. They have been on the back foot for as long as I can remember, you know, making fairly vague arguments about, you know, we're better off in and economic growth and but stuff which doesn't necessarily engage the public. And I hope that the public would have a voice in that, in terms of talking about why Europe matters to them.
Mm.
Excellent. Thanks ever so much again for your expert analysis, the two of you.
Thank you very much.
It'd be great to hear a little bit more about SNP's success in Scotland later on in the show and what this could mean. But in the meantime, it's actually approaching 7:30, which means that we're about to get your latest news update from Tim Smith. He's still going and in strong spirits. I can't believe the enthusiasm he reads each bulletin with. Check this out. 7:30 in the morning. He's been going since 10. It's Tim Smith with the news.
Broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM. This is your Election 50.
It's 7:30. I'm Tim Smith and this is the latest news. Tory Michael Tomlinson has won the seat of Mid Dorset and North Pool. He had 26,639 votes, 10,000 more than the Lib Dem candidate who was hoping to replace Annette Brooke as the party's MP in the area. There is to be a recount in Morley and Outwood, which is Ed Bull's seat. There has been speculation all night that Mr. Bulls may lose his seat in a disastrous election for Labour. Nick Harvey, the former Defence Minister, has lost his seat in the North Devon constituency to the Conservatives. A swing of 12.3% took the seat from the Lib Dems. In not surprising news, George Osborne has returned as the Conservative MP for Tatton. It looks like David Cameron is set to be Prime Minister again and be able to govern his own party without the help from any other party. Conservatives are forecast to win 325 seats in the UK election, enough to form a majority. David Cameron says he hopes to govern for all of the UK, as a BBC forecast gives the Tories 325 seats, enough to form a slender majority in the Commons. Labour has been wiped out by the SNP in Scotland and is failing to make much progress in England and Wales. Lord Ashdown has told BBC Somerset that it's been a bitter, painful and cruel night for the Liberal Democrats. He also accepts that he now has to eat his hat after making what turned out to be a bit of a rash wager just after the exit poll came in last night. Home Secretary Theresa May, MP for Maidenhead, said it's too early to predict if the Tories will gain enough seats to command a majority in the Commons.
We've been seeing some very good results coming through for the Conservatives in number of seats that we have taken. Sadly, we've lost a small number of colleagues as well. But let's see what the final result is going to be before we are able to decide actually how to go forward.
There's to be a recount in both Stoke-on-Trent South and Stoke-on-Trent North after discrepancies came to light with the number of votes being recorded. Two ballot boxes, plus a number of postal votes, were brought into counting process at a late stage just as a result was due to be announced. The Conservative and UKIP candidates Joe Rich and Tariq Mahmood are both unhappy with how the count has been administered. No city has felt the impact of SNP's landslide election victory more sharply than the former Labour heartland of Glasgow. Nationalist candidates were dubbed the Magnificent Seven as they knocked out their closest rivals in each and every area, turning Scotland's largest city from red to yellow very quickly. The Greens are yet to take any seats despite being predicted to. The announcement from Brighton Pavilion, formerly which was held by the party's Caroline Lucas, is expected shortly. The FTSE 100 is expected to jump by over 100 points when the stock market opens at 8 o'clock, a gain of around 2%. The pound has already hit its highest level against the US dollar since late February at $1.55. The markets had been braced for weeks of coalition negotiations, so there's relief that the result is so decisive. Some investors, though, are already pondering the implications of the surge in support for the SNP and the prospect of an EU referendum. You're up to date with all the latest news. Join us again at 8.
Tim Smith, full of enthusiasm, I see. How are you feeling, Tim?
Fantastic.
He's feeling fantastic. You're listening to Your Election 15, streaming live across the internet with all your general election coverage, updates and news. We were going since 10 o'clock yesterday, can you believe? And joining us now is Deborah in the studio. Good morning, Deborah.
Hello,
good
Deborah.
Morning.
How are you feeling?
Well, quite fresh, actually. I've had some sleep. So
oh, you haven't been up all night.
I haven't been up most of the night. No, I haven't. So I'm looking, well, feeling quite chipper.
Excellent.
You're looking quite chipper as well, actually, considering you haven't had
I think your
sleep,
your so. Positive chipper attitude is rubbing
I've
off on us.
Yeah, I've lifted you all.
Lifted
good,
us.
Good,
yeah.
Good. That's great.
So
that's
you're
good.
Here to take us through this morning's headlines and the papers.
Yeah, that's right. I picked up some papers on the way in. And obviously, bearing in mind, they went to press, you know, quite early last night. Mm-hmm. So most of the headlines are based upon the exit polls only, not proper figures. So, well, front of the Daily Mirror, completely black with just the words, 5 more damn years, question mark. So I think we know what the Mirror
says
thinks about the
outcome. Yeah,
that says it all. Yeah.
There.
So general election 2015 condemned again, it says. And obviously they are predicting what we've now seen to come true, which is a landslide victory, a victory for the Tory party and a loss for Ed Miliband. On page 2 and 3, we've got a headline here, Ed's exit wound. So predicting that Ed Miliband may stand down and we'll have some time to think about what's happened and where perhaps the campaign has gone wrong. Their political editor, Paul Routledge, is saying, I hate to say it, but we need a better system. Great thing, democracy. Every 5 years we get to vote who runs the show, except it doesn't work like that. 50 million people were entitled to vote yesterday, but only a fraction of that number determined the outcome. And of course, we've been talking quite a lot, haven't we, about, you know, PR.
Yep, certainly,
and
about the voting system.
UKIP, the voting system.
3.5 million voters,
exactly.
Which equates to 2 seats, whereas SNP nearing only 1.5, and that's over 56 seats it's looking like now for them. So it is a good point he's making there.
Absolutely. In the Eye, again, just the headlines, shock exit poll hands Cameron a big lead. Obviously, the Eye is largely Liberal Labour in its politics, so disappointment there as well. A lot of the papers are really only giving over the first couple of pages to the election. Lots of pictures of polling during the day, which I think's kind of got forgotten about in the sweep-up of all the results that you're seeing coming, but some good pictures of people going and voting in unusual locations. And talking really yesterday's story, I think, a lot, talking about what will happen if there's a hung parliament. A lot of their coverage, I think, based on the exit polls and based on the fact that we thought they were going to have to be fighting for a coalition. Obviously, overnight, that's changed.
In a more complicated situation.
Exactly, exactly. So things have changed. You can tell, in fact, actually, the papers have gone to press later than some of the others. So the Eye, I would say, went to press quite early.
Yep,
they've got
definitely.
Some very limited coverage of what's actually happened. The Sun, they've obviously gone after the 10 p.m. exit poll. So they've got they're talking about an out and out victory for Cameron. He's on the front page and the headline is Swinging the Blues. The Tories were heading for a shock general election victory last night, according to an exit poll. Inside, we've got the makeup of seats on page 2 and 3 from the Labour and Tory, and under the headline, Keep Cam and Carry On. Story in the bottom right-hand page of page 3, actually, which says that more voters were believed to have gone to the polls yesterday than at any election for 20 years as the fiercest battle for a general election drew them out. Pollsters Ipsos Mori predicted a turnout of around 74% compared with 65% in 2010. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
The Daily Mail, as you would expect, has got the wives' fashion. What everybody really wants to know is what everyone was wearing to go to the polls.
Of course.
Of course. So here we have Nicola Sturgeon in a green outfit. We have Sam Cam wearing blue after she cast her vote. We've got Miriam Clegg in what the Mail describes as bizarre yellow plastic shoes. And they are quite bizarre, actually.
They are different, aren't they?
They are different, yeah. So this is what the ladies were all wearing to vote yesterday.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's what you expect from the Daily Mail. Their headline, Cameron had heading back to number 10. So, you know, predicting a fairly easy win for David Cameron. According to James Slack, their political reporter, if the exit poll is correct, it's a victory every bit as stunning and surprising as John Major achieved in 1992. And they're effectively saying that Ed Miliband wrote his own epitaph with that 8-foot tombstone. And it may well indeed prove to have been his downfall or have contributed to his downfall.
It's probably one thing he's going to regret, isn't it?
I think it's one thing he is going to regret. Yes, exactly. Writing that in stone was probably not a great idea. So some of the stories going on in the Mail. The Telegraph, as you would imagine, again, crowing about the Conservatives' wins and their victory. Cameron will hold on to power, say exit polls, is the headline in the Telegraph. And inside, again, lots of pictures of the wives going polling yesterday. Interesting how the city has reacted. We've already been hearing this morning about positive gains for the pound overnight on the results that have been through, that have come through so far. But holidaymakers have received a boost last night because the exit polls suggest the Tories could stay in office, which has caused the value of the pound to jump by 1%. So that's good for everybody. And a staggering £25 million was staked on the first political Grand National. So Britain's bookmakers described the election as the first political Grand National after taking around £25 million in bets because the outcome was so uncertain. The largest bet was placed at William Hill, where a man who had won 193,000, predicting the correct result of the Scottish independence referendum, staked the lot, the whole lot, on hung Parliament. So yes, indeed. Yeah, so he won't be quite so happy.
Not such a great morning for him.
No, indeed, indeed. Further back in the Telegraph, there are various stories, as I said, about, you know, what was happening at the polling stations yesterday. I'm sure you were talking overnight about some of the stories that were happening. Some mess up with voting in Hackney. Also, some pollsters in Tower Hamlets were warned not to vote, being told that it was anti-Muslim to vote in the election. Another story in the Telegraph, council chiefs will today start counting the cost of political graffiti daubed on houses, businesses and civic buildings across the country over the course of the polling day. In Stevenage, a campaign poster of the UKIP candidate David Collins was defaced with a swastika symbol. So council's having to tidy up today in various ways after that.
Certainly.
Guardian headline says, poll shocker for Labour, says it all, basically. Their political correspondent or their commentator, Jonathan Friedland, says, if the numbers are right, bring on the inquests. I think there's going to be many of those this morning.
Certainly.
Particularly for the Lib Dems and Labour. What went wrong? Was it their campaign? Was it their leaders? You know, what was the problem behind it all? The Times, as you would imagine, Tories out in front. They've supported the Tories throughout this campaign, so pretty positive. Again, lots of nice pictures from the polling stations. It was good weather yesterday, which everyone said was you know, helped in boosting numbers and turnout. And in a particularly British twist, Twitter users managed to get the hashtag @dogsatpollingstations trending on the social network.
We did see this earlier on in the night.
See,
actually,
I took my dog with me to the polling station. So yeah, and there are lots of selfies on Twitter with people with their dogs outside the polling station. So.
Did you take a selfie
with
your dog?
I didn't take a selfie with my dog. No, actually, I left him outside my daughter, but I did take him along to the polling station, and there were quite a few dogs actually in the polling station, so yeah, that was good. He seemed to like it anyway. So.
Oh, bless him.
Yes, indeed, yeah. Interesting piece in The Eye about almost one third of new MPs are expected to be female, which is great.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so record numbers of women are set to be elected to the House of Commons, whatever its final political complexion. About 30% of MPs are expected to be female, compared with fewer than 25% in the last Parliament.
That's good.
Excellent.
We saw some very good gains very early on, didn't we? Even Labour in the first three seats, in fact, that were declared in Sunderland were all female MPs who returned to the House.
Yeah.
So that's great. Finally, the Daily Express now give us a vote on the EU. Obviously, the Express famously a couple of weeks ago came out in support of Nigel Farage. In fact, obviously, their owner, Richard Desmond, has contributed a lot to UKIP's coffers. So they're very desperately trying in their coverage to put a positive swing on UKIP's performance.
Must have been quite hard for them to come up with a headline that would have done that justice.
Well, yeah, you say that, but they've managed the rise of UKIP. I'm not quite sure how they worked that one out, but anyway, the party that now strikes fear into Westminster rivals. So yeah, they're trying their hardest to make it sound like a positive lead for Nigel Farage, who, as we know, has said he will stand down if he doesn't win.
So do you think the reporting indicates surprise about Labour's rough night?
Definitely, yes. I think definitely everybody was taken by surprise about the exit poll versus the opinion polls that we've been looking at throughout the campaign. I think everyone was very surprised. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Thanks so much, Deborah. Great to have an insight into what the papers were providing you this morning. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy the rest of General Election Day.
Thank you very much.
We're now joined by Matt Joy, our man behind the scenes who's been watching the TV.
Before we speak to Matt, we've just received a tweet from Nathaniel Hobby, who tweeted at your election 15, and he said, good to be waking up to hear you live on radio. Well done, guys, on the great coverage. Keep it up.
Well, thank you, Nathaniel, and good morning to you. Glad to have you with us on this journey.
It is always good to get some feedback from our listeners and a little bit of support in these early hours as we are downing our coffee that tastes like mud.
So from one medium to another, we're going to jump straight from the papers, from the printing press, to the world of television. Mr. Matt Joy is back.
Hello, how are you doing?
Hi, Matt. Okay, how are you?
I'm very well.
You look very well.
Very well.
You look a bit more lively than you did earlier.
I'm always lively. I don't know what you're talking about.
You were asleep on that sofa a second ago.
Not at all. As this is my last bulletin of the night, I know. I'm sorry.
I'm hurt.
I thought you might be. I thought I'd run through each party's coverage and the coverage they've received throughout the night, starting with, where else to start than Labour, obviously taking a real battering when you look in comparison to the opinion polls, to the actual result. It's definitely not what they're expecting. A lot of the coverage has been focused around Ed Miliband, whether he is the right man to take them forward. Again, that's a question for, you say another day. Some reports suggesting he may be out of a job by lunchtime have gone as far as to say whether there's any truth in those rumours. It's yet to be seen. Another party who have taken a real, real punishment overnight, obviously, is the Liberal Democrats. I don't think it came as too much of a surprise that they lost a fair few seats. Obviously, following the election in 2010, it wasn't perhaps what Liberal Democrats voters voted for. So it's no real surprise. Obviously, they've lost a lot of seats to the SNP, who's the coverage for them has been. It's been a real revelation, a real revolution as well in Scotland. The coverage has been very positive when it comes to the SNP. Obviously, we're watching British. Well, I've been watching British channels. Whether I was watching, a purely Scottish-based one, the coverage may have been slightly different. One can only speculate. UKIP. This is quite an interesting one. Obviously, UKIP, they've received a fair share of the vote, as was alluded to in the previous piece, talking about the papers when there was a feature, obviously, that whether proportional representation is more of a fairer method. And I found this quite interesting because UKIP haven't had a huge amount of mention. It's obviously, there's been some focus. Well, I say there's been some focus. There hasn't really. On Nigel Farage's his seat still isn't in, I do believe. They've only got one seat, with a fair share of the vote, however. But they haven't got much coverage, which is interesting. When you feel who does run these broadcasting, whether they are pro, conservative, pro-Labour, whatever, do they not want a change in the status quo? That's, again, a question for another day. And I think another party who haven't received much attention, Green Party, probably done as well as expected. But I think what has been the most surprising for me has been the lack of coverage towards the Conservatives. They've seen, obviously, they're heading the. They've got 286 seats at the moment to Labour's 217, or it's 287 now. But they haven't got a huge amount of coverage. It's been mostly about the SNP rise, the Labour downfall, the Liberal Democrat downfall, and that's surprising considering it's going to be a Conservative-led government, whether it's a majority or not. It could be very close indeed. But they've just gone about their business quite quietly, which I think is really sums up how their campaign's been. Okay, not much has been said about them. A lot's been said about Labour and the sort of revolution, obviously, with the teen voters going towards Labour. Massive amounts have been said about UKIP, massive amounts have been said about the SNP, but not a huge amount in comparison has been said about the Conservatives, and it hasn't tonight either.
I think it's probably this result has come as quite a surprise to many. So I can imagine that the media corporates and the media firms are somewhat in shock of the results themselves and still adjusting, and I'm sure the bulletins we see this morning will encompass the fact that it will be a Conservative government, not the hung parliament that we were expecting.
I think I do agree with you, but at the same time, the polls that were coming out sort of around 10 o'clock last night did indicate that the Conservatives would be in and around this position. I think they've ended up doing better than those polls suggested. But even then, not much was being said. More was being said about, you know, the Liberal Democrats, the SNP, who have had disastrous and brilliant elections, you know, respectively. However, it's nothing in comparison to 289 seats, which the Conservatives have won so far. And they're going to be 10 times more of an important player, because at the end of the day, it's going to be a Conservative-led government.
Well, thanks very much, Matt Joy, for your bulletins throughout the day. Have you enjoyed your role?
I've absolutely enjoyed it. I'd like to thank everyone behind the scenes. Absolutely everyone. Everyone has been fantastic. And it's just been a real privilege to be a part of it.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you very much.
So, he may have won his seat in the constituency of Doncaster North, but his acceptance speech earlier, Labour Party leader Ed Miliband admitted that the writing was clearly on the wall for his party.
Now, the results are still coming in, but this has clearly been a very disappointing and difficult night for the Labour Party. We haven't made the gains we wanted in England and Wales. And in Scotland, we've seen a surge of nationalism overwhelm our party. Now, I want to say to all the dedicated and decent colleagues in Scotland who have lost their seats that I'm deeply sorry for what has happened. And I also want to say that the next government has a huge responsibility. It has a huge responsibility in facing the very difficult task of keeping our country together. Whatever party we come from, if we believe in the United Kingdom, we should stand up for people in every part of our United Kingdom. Because, you know, I believe that what unites us is much, much more than what divides us. Friends, I'm now going to go to London to await the full results to come through. But I just want to reiterate my thanks to the people of Doncaster North. It is a huge privilege to be your Member of Parliament. It is a huge privilege for you to have placed your trust in me. Thank you very much.
So it's now 7:50 and we've just got some breaking news through. The Conservative Simon Hoare holds North Dorset seat with
30,227 votes.
I'm very tired. I do apologise for that stutter over there.
Oh, bless her. Numbers are quite difficult to read. I'll let you off.
They are.
We're joined again by political editor Alex Folkard.
Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling excellent, actually. I think I'm brighter than everyone else here, to be honest. You're looking like a zombie, but that's because you put in lots of work today. So, brilliant effort, guys.
Thank you.
Yes, latest results. Okay, so we've had Simon Hoare just come in. Another convincing margin there for Conservative Simon Hoare in North Dorset. I mean, it's a trend that has been that we've seen throughout this morning, to be honest, across Dorset. Conservatives doing really well across the board, not really facing much opposition. I mean, the Mid Dorset and North Poole seat that we've been talking about tirelessly was a seat that was an ultra marginal seat in Dorset that was Lib Dem, that had only 200 seats in it. But now Tomlinson has gained a 10,000 vote margin. So that's a phenomenal result for him. He's turned the tide against the Lib Dems in Mid Poole and North Dorset to hand the Conservatives another blue seat in Dorset. So yes, we've also had, obviously, Conor Burns confirmed much earlier, in fact, that he'll be MP for Bournemouth West. Richard Drax will be a Conservative MP for South Dorset once again, and so will Oliver Letwin for West Dorset. So all the results are in now for Dorset. That pretty much concludes our roundup of Dorset, but we'll be keeping up to date with the national picture. I mean, it is looking like a Conservative government. The latest polls are suggesting, while Sky is bringing us 326, BBC was a bit unsure earlier today. They were suggesting 3-4. So who knows? They could get a majority. They could be a minority. But Midpool and North Dorset may have played a factor in the national picture, essentially. We've also had a few Labour pinches at the last furlong. We've had Labour take Hove from the Conservatives. We've also had them take a couple of other seats. But, I mean, the pitch is looking bright for the Blues throughout the nation, looking likely to secure a majority. Lib Dems are the biggest disappointment of the night. I think they're on 8 seats, which is down approximately 50 seats. A lot of that being picked up equally between the Conservative and Labour parties, but also the SNP pinched a few key seats in Scotland. Only one seat in Scotland has not gone to the SNP, and that was the Edinburgh seat. So we're looking at a very, very nationalist Scotland after today's events. George Osborne has kept his seat in Tassin, so he'll be bringing us more budget fun as of tomorrow. So yeah, plenty of install in the next 5 years.
In terms of SNP, as we were talking about there, their sort of whitewash of Scotland, what could this mean? What is this actually going to impact in terms of the forming of the government, a future referendum in Scotland, potential Scottish independence? It's all very well. I mean, the media have speculated a lot about SNP, and it has come through, and it's been very positive at the demise of Labour, albeit. But what does this actually mean?
Well, I mean, Jim Murphy getting the boot out of sorry, that was awful. It was a real shame for Labour to get their leader kicked out of Scotland. I mean, at the end of the day, the SNP are feeding off the back of a referendum, which is created a lot of national pride, hysteria. In fact, they've fed off that. They've dominated the Scottish end of the poll. But I don't think there was any doubt when you saw Nicola Sturgeon step up in the TV debates, explain herself well as an orator. Also, the applause she got from both the English and Scottish audiences indicated she was a popular leader. But yeah, in terms of referendum, we've been promised that that we're not going to get a referendum from Sturgeon. So, but I mean, it wouldn't be the first time a politician has broken their promise. That's for certain. It's kind of the reason why I'm paying £9,000 tuition fees.
Oh, yes.
Sorry to take a dig. Yeah, that's one positive I'm going to take out tonight as a political analyst, is that at least Liberal Democrats have had some justice in that the public have felt betrayed and they've responded to that. They've acted on that. And there's nothing more democratic than kicking out someone you don't like. So, you know, Charles Kennedy being dropped as well is an interesting one. You know, he's leader of the Liberal Democrats. It'd be a real shame for him tonight. I'm sure he's having a few stiff drinks and maybe a little cry. Who knows? But yeah, the picture across the rest of the country is developing. Ed Miliband, we heard there, is not in himself feeling too confident. Is that the right angle to take?
Yeah, I can't imagine he is going to be feeling too confident. Obviously, this morning is quite a tough time for the likes of Ed Miliband and Nick Clegg. It's likely that we're going to see both of them dropped by their parties, forced into resigning by the end of the day.
I don't know. I think Ed Miliband could come back. I think the Labour Party have had a monumental defeat this election, and I think that's only starting to become clear. But at the end of the day, Ed Miliband has run a campaign which has gained a lot of Labour support. Whether or not opening up to the other parties has split the vote a bit more on the left, it's up for debate. But the fact that UKIP wasn't able to split the Conservative vote has indeed favoured the Conservatives. So undoubtedly, we will be seeing David Cameron driving off in his Jag to Conservative HQ to celebrate shortly, undoubtedly. But of course, we are still waiting for results. So who knows? Who knows? It could go completely the opposite way.
One of the results we're actually waiting for, is it not, is still UKIP leader Nigel Farage and his seat. Any confirmation on whether he's managed to gain that?
Was that? Sorry, we have our editor-in-chief, Joe Nerasessian, here today to give us the result.
Yeah, unfortunately, Farage basically, we won't be finding out Farage if he gets his seat in South Thanet until about 11 a.m. There was a bit of a problem and they didn't start counting till about 5 a.m. So Nigel might have to wait a little bit longer.
Oh dear, and I hear we're also having recounts in various other places across the country. In Ed Ball's constituency, I believe they're still holding a recount to find out whether or not he will gain a seat there. News on the rumours in the rumour mill are saying that the Labour Party have requested that recount. So maybe the initial vote did not come out.
What grounds do you have to request a recount?
Well, you have to have substantial evidence that an electoral breach has been made in the process of elections. But I mean, it can be all sorts. There are obviously very tight rules regarding British politics because we are a bastion of democracy, are we not, in the greater developed world, but at the same time it is important that to suggest that votes are still coming in. We still don't have the full picture. We still don't know how many seats are going to go to the minority parties, and a few could be pinched at the last. So,
well, hopefully we'll be able to paint a clearer picture by the end of our broadcast here this morning. But now it's time for your latest news updates.